From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is Friday. That is right, Friday has come. It is July 17th, 2015, and you are locked into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We've got a great show filled with a ton of discussion for you. We'll continue our chat from yesterday's show, centered on former Michigan State wide receiver standout back in 1999, Plaxico Burress, and his choice words via Twitter for former Michigan State head football coach Nick Saban. We'll discuss that and continue our chat from yesterday's show. Also, a video game settlement has been approved for those college football players who have sued EA Sports and the NCAA for using their likeness in the video game realm. We'll discuss the details of that report. Also, the British Open is in full gear heading into the weekend despite the rain delays that they have been battered with constantly throughout these past 2 days. We'll discuss the favorites heading into the weekend, and we'll conclude the show with Reflection Friday. All of that and so much more, folks. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this July 17th. Pitcher Cam Bukes told the Detroit Tigers that he will return to Michigan State for his redshirt junior season in the fall, part of a record 8 Spartans who were taken in the MLB draft from June 8th to the 10th. Now, Bukes was one of 3 MSU underclassmen picked. Outfielder Cam Gibson was taken in the 5th round to Detroit, and left-handed pitcher Anthony Mississkiewicz in the 18th round to Seattle Mariners. Both signed contracts shortly after the draft and opted bypass their final season in East Lansing. The Detroit Tigers are calling up shortstop prospect Dixon Machado before tonight's return from the All-Star break against the Baltimore Orioles at 7 p.m. Machado will take the roster spot of first baseman Mark Cross, who is going to on paternity leave for on the paternity leave list for his the birth of his daughter. All right, the sexual assault case against former Tigers pitcher Evan Reed ended today when he pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor aggravated assault charge. Now, Reed had been accused of raping a 45-year-old woman at a Detroit casino hotel in March of 2014. The case was previously thrown out by a lower court and then reinstated on appeal and set for trial before today's hearing. The Detroit Pistons have signed, officially, rookie Darren Hilliard, who was drafted in the 2nd round, number 38 overall. Financial terms were not disclosed. Hilliard played 4 years at Villanova and is expected to compete for playing time at shooting guard and small forward. Hilliard struggled somewhat during the Orlando NBA Summer League, but Pistons coaches said they were still impressed with his energy and his defense. The Los Angeles Clippers have signed free agent forward Josh Smith, who, of course, once played for the Detroit Pistons and helped eliminate the Clippers from last year's season playoffs when he was with the Houston Rockets. The Clippers announced that deal yesterday. Now, Smith reportedly signed a 1-year contract for the veteran's minimum worth of $1.5 million. A source told that to ESPN's Chris Broussard, and also that Smith chose winning in a defined role over money. All right, Friday at the British Open started late because of heavy rains and then began in a window of rare calm before round-shattering winds would roll in. Now, taking full advantage of that brief instance of calm was Danny Willett, who started the day 1 stroke behind leader Dustin Johnson, but by hole 10 had built a three-shot lead on the field. Willett currently is 9 under, which is 2 strokes clear of the field. He really balled out today. All right, and a judge granted approval of a $60 million settlement of several class action lawsuits relating to video game makers for using the names, images, and likenesses of college football and men's college basketball players. Now, U.S. District Judge Claudia Wilkin approved a $60 million payment to the players on Thursday and said that any student athlete who wants in on the claim must file by July 31st. Objectors to the settlement have 30 days to appeal once Wilkin finalizes the approval. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, it's about that time to start the show.
Hold on to me, don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? Your first name is free, last name is dumb. But you still believe in where we're from. Man's red flower.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I love that joint. That's actually Pharrell Williams, his new joint entitled Freedom. I heard it actually when I was doing some work last night. It happened to be on one commercial, and I'm like, you know, I got to play that on Current Sports. Pharrell Williams, one of my favorite producers in the world of music. But hey, welcome to the show, folks. We've got a packed one for you. I got to remind you all before we proceed here that, of course, Current Sports TV aired last night at 10 p.m. I got the chance to sit down with Michigan State star linebacker Darian Harris. That's right. It was a fantastic chat. Of course, we played a sneak peek of that interview on yesterday's show, radio show, as we customarily do week by week. And if you didn't get a chance to see the episode, all you got to do is simply go to video.wkar.org. Again, that's video.wkar.org. And it was a fantastic chat. And in the 12th man, of course, that's the more relaxed part of the Current Sports TV makeup. And, you know, it's a chance where you guys get to weigh in and shoot questions at Darian. And we had a few good ones this week, you know, one concerning who was Darian Harris's celebrity crush. He had a very interesting and fun answer on that one. Another one was, you know, what has been his biggest hit in college so far. And he recounted a pretty cool memory against Eastern Michigan University. So if you happen to miss it, again, just simply go to video.wkar.org. Also, by going to that link, you can also watch any episode of Current Sports TV that you might have missed in the show's history. And pretty thrilling announcement that we want to bring you all next week, Wednesday, for next week's Current Sports TV taping. I'll be sitting down with one of the more decorated Michigan State track and field stars we've seen in recent years, that being Torrey Franklin, who just wrapped up her senior year at MSU and will now be pursuing the professional realm of track and field and trying to reach out for endorsements and so on and so forth. So Torrey will join me next week to talk about that grind and recount some of her favorite memories of being a Spartan here on campus. Phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer here on WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Happy Friday, brother.
Happy Friday, Al. Last night, I actually started watching a new TV show, something I hadn't tried before. It's The British Office. I'm not sure if you've watched The Office, the American version.
I have.
Great show, one of my favorite shows. But The British Office was the predecessor. It was the first office. So their writers, you really realize watching that their writers were the OGs, original geniuses, of course. So The British Office is really quite fantastic. I'm loving it so far. Ricky Gervais is a fantastic actor in it. Mm. And it's really impressive just how many of these concepts, which I thought the American Office came up with, are actually from the British Office. Worth a check out.
I am definitely going to check that out. Is that on Netflix?
It is.
It is on Netflix. I'm going to have to check that out and add that to my list. You know, it's rare because I'm a big TV buff myself, especially, you know, around this time of the year, Isaac. I mean, of course, sports are still going on. I mean, you got baseball in full swing right now. Soccer is certainly, still moving and shaking as well. You got, you know, the golf majors taking place. I mean, the British Open is taking place as we speak, for goodness sake. But, you know, it does slow down, though. It does slow down. You and I were actually talking before the show, and we're sitting here saying, oh, man, I mean, yeah, what else is going on? I mean, there's no football to watch. There's no basketball to watch other than the summer league games in which, you know, you kind of got to take that whole thing with a grain of salt because, hey, you know, players may be having outstanding performances, but a lot of the names you don't know. These aren't like the big names in the NBA. But a lot of pretty impressive future talent, but a lot of guys don't even play defense in summer league as well. But I don't know. That's another conversation for another day. There just aren't many things going on as opposed to other months in the sporting year. So, I mean, yeah, this is a lot of time for us to, if there's nothing on TV, if there are no sports to watch, to watch a lot of TV shows. I'm a big fan of television shows, and I'm watching, you know, I'm always caught up watching the more serious shows out there. I rarely get a chance to sit down and watch, comedy series. That's something I'm really starting to endeavor more into. And one of my favorites has to be probably, and this even has a sports twist to it, The League. I love The League, which airs on FX, actually. So that's like the only comedic show I watch, though. But I'm definitely going to add that to my list, Isaac. I want to start today's show, though, as we dive into our rundown here. I want to start with our conversation that we had yesterday, of course, concerning the Twitter war. Well, it's a Twitter war if you look at, you know, the side of Plaxico Burress, because he went on Twitter to voice his comments concerning statements that Nick Saban, former Michigan State head coach, had to say when it comes to, NFL executives and league personnel letting college football players know their potential draft stock, right before bowl games. Now, you know, Nick Saban, it's interesting stuff because, again, Plaxico Burress, he really thought it was ironic when Nick said it was a distraction for players to have to think about declaring for the NFL draft while they were still competing for their college teams. And that's because Saban, according to Burress, was thinking about leaving the Spartans while he was still coaching them. Now, just a quick summary, we talked about this on the heels of yesterday's show. Just a very quick summary here. Burress, a first-round pick for the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2000, tweeted on Wednesday that Saban told his players he was committed to the team a day before he left for LSU in December of 1999. Just to read a few of Burress's tweets here, he says, Nick Saban looked at his players in the face at the Duff, said he wasn't leaving, I'm committed to the program, and was gone the next day. True story. Then he goes on to send another tweet that says, now Nick Saban's players are being distracted by the NFL and chasing a dream. Ha ha, tell your story, Nick. LSU showed you dollar signs. You was gone. Ha. And then he goes on to tweet another one here, which I can't get to, but he just goes on to say that, you know, basically Nick Saban's comments can't be backed up or justified, because he's basically being, you know, kind of hypocritical, because he left Michigan State when he said he was staying. And, you know, there's been, you know, when really diving into this subject, Isaac, first off, you heard my thoughts yesterday. I really think that we sometimes forget that sports is a business at times, Isaac. And, you know, coaches are trying to keep their jobs. And at the end of the day, you know, kids are trying to make moolah when they come to a program like the Alabama Crimson Tide, a program that has won championships, national titles on the gridiron in the years 2009, 11, 12, when talking about recent years. And, you know, at the end of the day, these kids have a certain mindset when they walk on a college program like Alabama, and coaches at the end of the day want to win national championships. There have been a plethora of other coaches who have recanted on their statements when you talk about their commitment to a current program and then leaving right away. You know, Saban stayed at LSU for what, 5 seasons before being lured by the NFL, by the Miami Dolphins in 2005, if you remember. When Alabama fired Mike Shula after the 2006 season, speculation was rampant that the Crimson Tide were working to hire Saban. But Saban denied it publicly and did it to the Dolphins players as well. "I guess I have to say it," Saban said. "I'm not going to be the Alabama coach." Then he goes on to say, well, this is what actually coming from Dolphin quarterback Joey Harrington at the time. If you remember, Joey Harrington is also a former Detroit Lions quarterback as well. That still brings me nightmares. But Joey Harrington went on to say, quote, "He told us a couple weeks ago that he's proud to be a Dolphin and he's going to be sticking around. So I take him at his word." 2 weeks later, Saban was introduced as the new coach at Alabama. Bobby Petrino is another example, Isaac. He had an interesting relationship with Honesty throughout his coaching career. His started in 2004. His second season at Louisville, while the Cardinals prepared for their bowl game, Petrino was linked to multiple other jobs. Petrino said this at the time, quote, "I want to make it clear that I'm not interested in any other coaching jobs, and I'm happy at the University of Louisville. I'm very excited about our move into the Big East, the opportunity to play in a BCS bowl game, and the chance to compete for a national championship." Soon after making that statement, he interviewed for the LSU job that went to Les Miles. Before the 2006 season, Petrino upped his commitment to Louisville by signing a hefty 10-year contract. That devotion lasted one more season. 6 months later, Petrino took the Atlanta Falcons head coaching job after previously committing to that respective program. How about, I mean, and I could go down the list here. There's like 5 other examples I could bring up. So even though, you know, and that's why you kind of have to take, you know, some coaches, you know, who say they're committed to a program. At times, you know, how much weight does that statement really hold? Because I tell you what, if another opportunity presents itself that seems more sexy, that pays more money, is maybe at a more, you know, pristine program, quote unquote, you better believe that coach may change his mind. And we've seen it happen before. So I can understand the quarrel, though, because if you are a young kid coming out of high school and you're sitting down there with a respective coach from a certain college football program, and you sit down with that coach, and you're a kid at the time. You're not a grown man yet. You're sitting down with this coach, and he's selling you this dream about his program. "If you come to my program, we are going to be committed to you. If you come to our program, I'm going to be there. If you come to our program, we are going to develop you." As a kid, you are drinking that Kool-Aid. You're sitting there saying, "Yeah, I want to be a part of something special." And then, yeah, you know, if I'm Plaxico Burress and you know, the day after you say that to me, you're up and gone, you better believe I'm going to take that personally. And you know, all, you know, we always have this term in society, your word is your bond. Well, not so much in sports, because we see that go out the window so many times, far too often.
Well, my favorite example is Brian Kelly's abandonment of Cincinnati before their Sugar Bowl game against Florida. Of course, that was a Cincinnati team that went 12-0 in the regular season, were absolutely outstanding. Brian Kelly, you know, he's an intense individual, But he really got those guys riled up and ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, he was out of the door for the Notre Dame job. Left before the bowl game. Cincinnati got blown out 51-24. I felt so bad for those players. And that's sometimes the nature of sports. You know, it's hard to defend staying at a team where a coach doesn't feel like there's a future. I'm not saying that was the case with MSU, but sometimes in the coach's eyes, better opportunities arise. But it's the matter of how you leave. There is a sign of dignity, respect, because Nick Saban, like you said, has done this to several programs. And as an LSU fan, I can tell you, leaving LSU, Saban was seen off in a warm-hearted manner, because Saban, it's like, thanks for the national championship in 2004. No worries. Have fun in the NFL. And then a year after the NFL, he goes over to LSU's arch rivals, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and goes on to win, what, 3 championships with them? So, no, Saban's got some loyalty issues, without a doubt. Definitely some trust issues. However, one thing I do have to bring up in his defense, and I am not a Saban fan whatsoever, he makes about $7 million a year right now. Back in Miami, he made $5 to $6 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
At LSU, he was making $2.4 million, and then before that, he was making about $2 million a year. So every time there was a pay raise with his leaving. So that's fair. However, he also stayed at Alabama in lieu of leaving for Texas 2 years ago
mm-hmm.
when they offered him $100 million to coach their program.
Right.
So you do have to applaud him for that.
Yeah, and you know, Saban's playing the game at the end of the day, and I get the mindset. Again, you know, he has certainly ruffled feathers on his way to the top, but, you know, being the head football coach at Alabama does come with a lot of weight. A lot of weight, point blank, period. So in the world of recruiting, and I think it's worse, Isaac, I want to get this point out there, because this is why this story, I think, has gotten so much steam in the past 2 days, is because at the end of the day, I get it. If you're doing it in the NFL is a business. Professional athletes have to, you know, they know that. They get that. They understand that. But in college football, you're dealing with kids. These are kids you're talking about. So if you're talking about a kid who's in high school, who, you know, he doesn't know anything about the business of football, about, you know, numbers. He's not getting paid a salary. He's not a professional in this yet. But if you're going to their houses and meeting their families and shaking their hands and staring this kid, you know, in the eyes and selling them on this dream and selling them on this respective hope, and then you go up and do something else, I have a problem with that. I definitely do have a problem with that. And we see it happen so many times in the world of college sports. And you know why? I you know, this is part of the reason why I hate the world of recruiting, because this goes right up into that conversation directly and stares you in the eyes. An example that really hits home right here in Michigan, of course, back in February, when we I remember, you know, I think it was like the beginning of the month of February, this story just took the sports you know, news by storm here in Michigan. And that concerns Cass Tech running back Mike Weber and OSU's Stan Drayton. Mike Weber, fantastic running back for Cass Tech High School in Detroit. He was weighing his options as to where he would take his football talents. Ohio State's running back coach at the time was Stan Drayton. Stan Drayton was Mike's primary recruiter. Stan Drayton was shaking the hands of Weber's family. Stan Drayton was at games and practices talking to Mike Weber and saying, if you come to our program, we are going to be committed to you. Mike Weber, keep this in mind. Again, he's a kid. This is a kid we're talking about. Right after Mike Weber says, okay, this sounds great. Stan seems like a great guy. I can't wait to work with him. What happens? Stan Drayton ups and leaves and takes a job with the Chicago Bears in the NFL. Mike Weber, as soon as it happened, goes to his Twitter account and says, quote, I'm hurt as H-E-double hockey sticks right now. I ain't gonna lie. and, you know, goes to voice his disappointment about this. Weber's high school coach was a bit more vocal about the process, suggesting that Ohio State head coach Urban Meyer and the Buckeyes did not show any respect toward Weber by intentionally withholding information regarding Drayton's future. This is the nasty world of college sports, because this happens. Mike Weber isn't the only kid this has happened to. Is it right? Not at all, but it does happen. And for me, you know, again, I go back to that saying, word is bond. Word is not always bond in college sports. And I understand why Plaxico Burress felt the need to voice his opinion about his time with Nick Saban, because he can relate, so to speak.
Al, we need some more transparency, because you're exactly right. We always say sports is a business, and it is. But for these college players, for these high school recruits, sports is not a business. It's a path to maybe having a very successful life, but they're not getting paid a penny yet.
Right.
So therefore, they've got no way of knowing what their chances of getting into the NFL are with a different coach, things like that. So if a coach makes a commitment to a player, he needs to keep it, because this kid's future is on the line. When Saban left MSU, he was probably, or at least risking, throwing away many more millions of dollars than just his contract had he chosen to stay. Saban's leaving. Saban was one of the best coaches in the nation at the time. Mm-hmm. And he is the best coach in the nation, and I would say probably ever right now. That's my opinion. But when you've got a coach of that caliber, of that prestige, his abandonment or leaving of a team, whatever you want to call it, that hurts players' draft prospects. And therefore, he's throwing away their money, and they have no idea it's going to happen. They don't have a chance to transfer, a chance to get the inside scoop. So it is unfair to these players. It's not like they already have a fat contract sitting in their hands. No, they've still got to fight for it. So It is unfair to these recruits more than anybody else.
Yeah, and you know, I think Saban's comments were more so spoken out of the pressure to stay on top. When you reach that mountaintop that Nick Saban has reached, three championships in the past few years with Alabama, you know, they're constantly in national championship talks left and right. When you reach that mountaintop, you want to stay there. You want to stay there. And, you know, looking at Nick Saban and his comments, I actually saw this article late last night. Well, not too late, around like 8 o'clock last night. And Nick Saban is really, you know, backing up his comments here with this. Because, you know, the reason why he made this statement is because he felt as though NFL executives coming out and saying, hey, this is where you're going to be drafted next year. They're doing this right before bowl games, and in doing that, that notion, you know, is on their mind, okay, where I'm going to be drafted in the NFL, that's taken away from them preparing to play in a bowl game. And, Nick Saban, you know, when he complained that NFL, you know, that the NFL distracted his players by telling them which round they were projected to be drafted in just before the college football playoff game against Ohio State, it came off like an excuse for losing that game. So Nick comes out and says this. He says that's not the case. He says, quote, it wasn't an excuse at all for losing to Ohio State. There's no excuse. We didn't play as well as we wanted to play. That's my responsibility. It's my fault. It kind of surprises me that somebody in the media would take it that way when you try to make a suggestion that will make things better. And they take it as an excuse for what you didn't do. It's my responsibility. I didn't manage it well enough to get our team ready to play the game, and our team chemistry wasn't what it needed to be. And that's my responsibility. Still, Saban thinks the NFL Draft Advisory Board would serve players well to wait until after the year in order to give them their draft projections. And, you know, maybe he does have a legitimate quarrel here, because if you look at it, you know, maybe it is a distraction. Maybe this kid is thinking about his future and kind of maybe putting the bowl game on his back burner. But as a head coach, you've been dealing with distractions all season, I'm sure. You've been dealing with distraction of maybe having your players, deal with something off the field. How many times have we seen off the field distraction when it comes to college players? You, as a coach, that is your job to manage that. it's pushing back the deadline, I don't think that's going to do anything to help your respective team. If your team wasn't prepared mentally to go in that game, that responsibility falls on your shoulders and your team's shoulders. Point blank, period. I don't care what deadline you're trying to talk about here. So I think more so those comments and statements were made based on the pressure of staying on top. And it does come off, and I can see how the public looks at this as saying, okay, Nick Saban is just trying to come up with an excuse here as to why he lost the national championship game. You know, and again, you're a victim of your own success here. You've won championships in 2009, 2011, and 2012 with Alabama. Kids are going to want to come to your program and go to the NFL. Point blank, period. So you got to deal with that attention. And Nick is in an interesting position because when you look at a program like Alabama, you know, they don't have the luxury. And this is the thing that I think also speaks to, you know, how the attention of Alabama and their prestige in college football, and also the greatness of Nick Saban when it comes to his coaching. He's ideally like a John Calipari in college basketball, where he is rebuilding each and every season. He's getting players who can make that leap to the NFL after 1 year of playing at Bama. They are that good. But at the same time, it evens out because you are getting the creme de la creme, usually, of recruits across the board in the nation. And also, you know, when you're having that talent, I think this also evens the playing field because, okay, you get the best of the best of recruits, but on a seasonally basis, you are playing against veterans, you know, other programs that have the luxury of having more veterans than you do, even though you have the best talent, quote unquote. So, you know, that sort of evens out the stars here in college football. But again, I don't think that pushing back the deadline, I don't think that's going to do anything to benefit a program like Alabama. I think it was ideally, it comes off as an excuse, if you will.
And now, it's, you know, you could say it's an excuse because that it is coming in the wake of losing a bowl game and everything like that, a catastrophic loss. However, Ohio State really suffers from the same problems. This isn't Joe Schmo for Ohio State or, you know, who goes to something, you know, what some no-name college. This is Ohio State. They've got tons of players with draft projections as well. So I really don't think he intended it as an excuse. But another thing to look at from Saban's angle, which makes him even a better coach than Calipari, is that, or more successful at least, is that Saban gets his players for a guaranteed 2 years. Calipari gets them for one. Saban gets them for two because of the rules about when you can declare for the draft in NBA and in the NFL. So Saban does have time to work with his program. And what's the alternative? How is a player not going to find out his draft stock? The media is going to write about it. Players are going to look it up. Because at the end of the day, college is great. College is awesome. Everybody should get a degree. But not everybody's going to get a degree. And if you've got $5 million on the line just a year down the road, yeah, that's something that's going to slip into the back of your mind. So, yeah, maybe it's a problem. It's a welcome problem. If I have players that can make the NFL, you better believe that I'm more than willing to deal with the fact that they might be a little bit distracted by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can definitely see that point of view as well. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the new video game settlement concerning college players in the football realm that just came through this morning, actually. Interesting details on that. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. A quick update. at the British Open. Of course, it's taking place at St. Andrews in Fife, Scotland. This player is trying to get their rounds in this morning because the rain has certainly hampered and dampened things. When you talk about tee times and whatnot for round two of the Open, but Danny Willett was able to he had a great round today. He actually shot a 66 in round one, and then in round two today he shot a 69. He is sitting at 9 under par. And that's good for first place at the British Open. Warren is at 7 under, tied with Zach Johnson, Adam Scott, Robert Stribb, and Dustin Johnson, who right now is partaking in round two of the Open Championship. Well, excuse me, the British Open Championship. So we'll keep you updated as things proceed in that tournament. I want to bring up, though, this is an interesting story, folks. A judge actually granted approval of a $60 million settlement of several class action lawsuits relating to video game makers using the names, images, and likenesses of both. And I actually, to correct myself before we hit that first break, it's not just college football players, but men's college basketball players as well. So the U.S. District Judge Claudia Wilkin approved a $60 million payment to the players on Thursday, and said that any student-athlete who wants in on the claim must file by July 31st. Objectors to the settlement have 30 days to appeal once Wilkin finalizes the approval. This is an attorney for the plaintiffs, Steve Berman. He said this to USA Today. Quote, "It's a landmark day. It's the first time student-athletes will get paid for use of their name, image, and likeness, and we're anxious to get the settlement funds to the students." Hey, the right ruling was handed out in my opinion, Isaac, here, because, again, I've always stated, I don't think that college athletes should be paid. However, with the amount of money that college sports drives in to the NCAA and to respective universities, especially when just looking at the mind-boggling numbers that the world of college football and college basketball alone drive in, I will say that, anytime these players, their jersey numbers are being used, or, you have a video game out that has, and it's clear, even though the names aren't on the rosters in the video game, but it's clear who the players are. You have the name. They look just like the players out on the court. Hey, there needs to be some compensation there. Point blank, period. If you're using my image to make money for your company, hey, you gotta break me off a piece of that, or we're gonna take this thing to court. So I think that the right ruling was handed out here. This was expected. I don't think this is a surprise to anyone out there. And I think the next question that will be raised from this ruling is, what door does this now open for in other areas when you talk about compensation for student athletes? Again, you talk about those jersey numbers. When someone goes to an MSU football game, for example, and wears the jersey number of Darian Harris, even though it doesn't have Darian's name on the back. Is that using Darian's, image? What do you do there? In other conversations as well. So, that sort of opens that door, and, you better believe that. I think that the student-athlete realm across the nation is going to try and kick down that door now. But when it comes to this, having a video game that has the heights, the weight, the number, and the overall image, a face of certain athletes, student athletes at respective colleges and universities in a video game that you can go and purchase and play at home, which EA Sports and the NCAA is getting money off of. Yeah, you better believe every student athlete who is a part of that game should have a check cut for them.
I think, like you said, the extension of this ruling to other aspects of sports merchandising when it comes to the college games is one of the most intriguing parts, because, like you said, it's no coincidence that when Denard Robinson was at Michigan, they were printing number 16 jerseys. Mm-hmm. I'm sure right now, Ohio State's got a decent bit of number 12 jerseys out for Cardale Jones. That's no coincidence. So it is interesting what doorways this opens up for other way or methods of compensation for student athletes. I also want to touch on the scale of this ruling, though, because this is huge. Listen to these numbers. Mm-hmm. There were 111,174 football players created and used on rosters by the NCAA games. 21,309 basketball players. That's incredible.
That's unbelievable. So
there's going to be some money in the moves right now. And the other thing is attorneys are likely going to get paid 33% to 30% as well. So everybody's making money except the NCAA, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, furthering those numbers to get into specifics about what each one of those players may get, more than 20,000 claims were filed by original July 2nd deadlines, and some players will receive a maximum of $7,200, which can be handed out as early as September, depending on the pace of the appeal. So, hey, you know, there are going to be some players out there getting $7,000 for their images being used in those video games. So, and you know, where does the video game, you know, atmosphere go from here? Because I tell you what, you know, a lot of my childhood was spent in front of a television with a remote control in my hand. And I used to buy the EA Sports, you know, college football and basketball games all the time. They were tremendously fun. So, you know, what does EA Sports decide to do here now? Do they decide, okay, we're going to shell out this money, but we still want to continue making these games? And if so, yeah, you talk about that conversation of college athletes getting paid. They're going to get paid if EA Sports decides to further their endeavors, or any other video game chain for that matter, decides to further their endeavors in continuing to make college sports games. The thing is, though, there's a roadblock in this thing, because in order to do that, you got to go through the wheelhouse of the NCAA. And knowing that they may have to shell out some money to their student athletes, the NCAA may put a stop to this, and we may not see another college video game in athletics forever. Who knows?
Well, Al, the last NCAA football game was actually made last year. Those franchises have been discontinued.
Yep,
NCAA basketball hasn't been a thing since either 11 or 10. The last one was NCAA basketball. It had Kevin Love on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like you said, no, I'm not sure if the NCAA will continue to do this. It would not surprise me at all if they saw this case coming from a mile away, saw it coming years down the road, and that's why they discontinued making the games, because they were suddenly like, oh yeah, now I've got to share the profits. This isn't as fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's definitely part of it, and I do hope that they continue to make them, though, because they're fun games. And if this is the case that they can use the players' likenesses, then maybe they will start putting names and different aspects to the players in the actual games, which would make it more enjoyable, because it's always just shady when you have to download those, you know, rosters offline. You're like, no virus, fingers crossed, come on.
But I tell you what, though, if they do that, Isaac, you're going to have individuals who play for the Michigan State soccer team, or people that play for the Michigan State lacrosse team. They are going to look at the football players and basketball players and say, what makes them better than us? Why aren't we getting paid that amount of money? You know what I mean? So then it becomes really, really sticky. I think this is too sticky to deal with, man. I just can't see the NCAA ruling on this, moving forward and saying, all right, EA Sports, hey, you can make a college basketball game, college football game, we'll shell out the profits, you know, and split them with the student athletes and us. You're going to have other sports, though, within that same realm of Division I competition saying, that is not fair to us. And this is going to create another big conversation that will be drawn out.
Al, in some ways, I feel like that already happens, though, because obviously the basketball and football players get all the spotlight, and with that, they get more gear, they get more attention, they get more of that exposure. All of that's really coveted by student athletes. So,
but moolah, though, changes it.
Money's different.
Money is different.
But at the same time, I feel like that's not quite as murky as the whole athlete compensation scale or pay grade anyway would be, because at the end of the day, if there's a video game being made about you, you get a certain percentage of the profits made from that game. And if there's not a video game being made about you, sorry, that's because your sport isn't as popular. It's not to say that's fair, but that would be a simpler way of doing it than just in general athlete compensation.
And then the other layer to this whole thing is this whole cost of attendance, conversation that actually Mark Hollis, we actually played a bite of that on Current Sports Radio and Current Sports TV a few months ago. Mark Hollis, he held his annual media sit down, and he does say, Mark Hollis said that, you know, he came out and said that, yeah, we have accounted for in our current budgets cost of attendance. And I think it was something million. I can't remember the exact dollar amount he put on it, but right now in the Michigan State athletic budget, they have accounted for the possibility of cost of attendance being enacted for student athletes. And that's going to vary by university. And that's a whole other conversation. There's so many different ways you can attack this conversation. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to the root question. Should college athletes be paid? What do you think? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's chat British Open really briefly here, Isaac, because, man, they have been struggling when it comes to the weather, out of the British Open right now. Of course, in Scotland, St. Andrews Links, which is an absolutely beautiful course. I love watching the British Open each and every year. And I tell you what, man, a young stud has come out of nowhere and now has a two-shot lead, as I mentioned previously, and that being Danny Willett, who I had never, those two names have never come out of my mouth. I never even heard of who Danny Willett is. But just to give you guys sort of a rundown, you know, a lot of people are comparing Danny Willett as really the English version of Ricky Fowler. If you look at it and compare the two ages, first off, Willett is 27. Fowler is 26. Willett had 4 amateur wins. Fowler had 5. Fowler held the world amateur golf number one spot for several stretches, actually, in 2007 and 2008. Willett overtook him during one of those stretches. Both players competed on the 2007 Walker Cup team, a Europe-America showdown that also featured notables like Rory McIlroy and Justin Johnson. So he really compares. If you want to compare him to somebody on the tour, when you talk about just his accomplishments, Ricky Fowler is that guy. He's pretty, pretty good. And he just really came out of nowhere today, though. I'm sitting there looking at the leaderboard, and of course, you know, Justin Johnson is right in the middle of round two. He actually sits even through 3 holes as we speak. So maybe Dustin could catch up to him and overtake the lead. Of course, Dustin finished up 7 under yesterday, shooting a 65. But, you know, the other guys who are actually tied with Dustin Johnson are Mark Warren, Zach Johnson, who finished with a 71 today. Mark finished with a 69. Adam Scott, who finished with a 67 today. And look at here, Paul Lawrie, who's actually in the middle of his round two. So, Dustin, if he gets some birdies running here, he could possibly overtake Danny. But it's really interesting because Danny really just came out of nowhere. I didn't even know who the guy was, and now he's sitting at the top of the leaderboard.
Oh, the guy who's still my favorite, though, still my favorite to win this whole thing. It's hard to pick against anybody named Jordan Spieth right now. Jordan Spieth has been on fire, of course, U.S. Open, and he's just had the best year. Not Dustin Johnson. No offense, Dustin, but he kind of choked it last time. So, No, Jordan Spieth, he's going pretty strong. -5 after a round and only 3 holes into round two. He's broken even. So I still like Jordan Spieth for this whole thing. Kid's just incredible. And he's such a likable guy, too. It's hard to pick against him. It really is.
Yeah, and Jordan Spieth, he's actually going for his 4th major of the season. We talked about how, you know, he's just been on a tear right now. The kid is really, really good. And right now, you know, I'm looking here online, and the favorites for this tourney are right now, after round one, Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth. And, it's going to be interesting to see those guys as they continue their rounds as the weekend goes on. Jason Day, his name has also come up. Zach Johnson, his name has also come up. In the contenders, you know, Danny Willett right now is leading the field. And I tell you what, I got to shout out Terry Kilday, who is the director of Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. We actually had Terry on the show last week to preview the British Open. And so far, hey, Terry has been spot on. I actually talked to him, after round one yesterday, and we were exchanging texts here and there. And Terry has nailed it so far, because at the time, after round one, of course, Dustin Johnson held the lead at the British Open. And Dustin Johnson is the man who Terry chose to win this whole thing and who he expects to hoist that trophy in the British Open on Sunday. It's going to be a fun weekend, though. I have to, shout out right now Tom Watson, because Tom Watson is currently, as many expect, because, you know, he didn't have a great first round, but he is, playing in his final round at the British Open. So Tom Watson is a longtime golf figure who will certainly be missed. Actually, the very first time that Tom Watson played the British Open, he won it as a young stud. And they were actually showing highlights this morning of Tom Watson. And after he teed off on his very first hole to start his round two, he got a standing ovation. It was a pretty cool moment. I can only imagine how the atmosphere is going to be on the 18th hole when Tom Watson finishes up that round. It doesn't look like he's going to make the cut as of right now. But when he finishes up and doesn't make the cut, it's going to be quite the scene that you'll see played throughout the day on ESPN and other media outlets.
Tom Watson, like you said, really just a legendary figure. He's 11th all-time in wins on the PGA Tour. He's 65 now, so it's about time to settle down, kick back, get some lemonade, and make yourself a nice Jack Nicklaus, So right. Anyway, yeah, it's congrats to him for his last round. I'm sure he'll get a huge ovation. And what a budding rivalry between Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson. This is intriguing. They're just going back and forth in a lot of recent competitions.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch as the weekend goes on. So you're still sticking with Spieth. I think we both chose Spieth. And I think Terry, when we had on the show, he weighed in and chose, of course, Dustin Johnson to win this whole thing. So we'll see as the round moves on. You talk about, Tom Watson, this being his final British Open. What do you do after you retire, though, man? I mean, if you're a golfer, because ideally, that's what you do when you retire. You go out and play golf and relax, right?
I guess you just reverse your life a little. Maybe you pick up surfing or something at 65.
I don't know if Tom Watson is surfing. That might be a health hazard for him. Maybe bowling, maybe some bowling in his future. Maybe some, some chess here and there. Who knows? But we wish Tom Watson well, man. It's going to be pretty cool to see him finish up today's round two. All right, let's hit our second break. And when we come back, we'll put a bow on this week in current sports by bringing you Reflection Friday. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back. Well, let's put a bow on this week in WKAR's current sports by reflecting a bit, huh? We dub it Reflection Friday, where we take a look at this week on the show and bring to you our favorite moments, our favorite segments, our favorite stories, and maybe a few of those that we may have not even gotten the chance to bring up here on the show. So here we go. Time for Reflection Friday. Oh, but first off, Isaac, it's been a fantastic week here on the show. I want to talk about our notable interviews that we had throughout the week. I want to give a shout-out to Chase DeYoung, who was actually on the show Tuesday to talk about his experience with the Lansing Lugnuts. Chase was actually traded to the Toronto Blue Jays 2 weeks ago. And, I loved how he just kept it real with us. I mean, he talked about how minor league baseball players don't get played that much, but, get paid that much, but they play for the love of the game. And it's a grind. And he recounted his experience of when he was let know that he was going to be traded, and how he was just happened to be on the plane the next day heading, to California, with the LA Dodgers. He, of course, the Toronto Blue Jays is affiliated with the Lansing Lugnuts, but he got traded to the LA Dodgers, and he was on a plane heading to California just like that. So Chase just kept it real. If you missed that interview or any interview that we had on the show, of course, we post every show on WKAR.org. Also, Blake McCullough, bodybuilder. It was interesting to dive into that world, and Zia addressed the elephant in the room when you talk about that sport, that being steroid use. He kept it real as well with us on Wednesday. And Darian Harris, how about him being our guest on Current Sports TV? It's been a jam-packed week, and we thank those three guests for joining us.
Oh, they were all fantastic. I especially also just loved DeYoung's honesty and, like you said, openness, because I've never had that close of an inside view into an athlete's life. That was absolutely incredible for me, and it shows you just how much love you have to have for the game to play that. But one of my reflections has to be Seth Curry, the brother of Steph Curry, who I wrote an article about, and I said, listen, this guy's an NBA talent. He's not Steph. He's not. Don't compare him to Steph.
Yeah.
But they play similarly, and he's an NBA talent. And so far, I've got to shout out him because he's proven me right, averaging 25.3 points per game in the Summer League. That's leading the Las Vegas Summer League and leading the Pelicans to an undefeated 4-0 record. They play tomorrow against the Golden State Warriors of all teams in the round of 8 for the Summer League Las Vegas playoffs. So really interesting stuff there.
How about that? You know, I think Seth may have an added incentive now looking at the success that his brother Steph has had in the NBA. I'm going to be excited to see if he makes an NBA roster in it and possibly see him on the hardwood. So also LA Clippers, they have signed actually free agent for Josh Smith, who, if you remember, used to play for the Detroit Pistons. They traded him mid-year last season to the Houston Rockets, and now he's a Clipper. Smith reportedly signed a one-year contract for the veteran's minimum worth of $1.5 million. And it's being said that Smith, quote, chose winning and a defined role over money. Shots fired maybe there, huh?
Now, it's remind me of what David West did when he chose the Spurs. He obviously turned down, or not obviously, but he chose to turn down $11 million and took the veterans minimum to play with the Spurs. Winning's the new trend, I guess.
Yeah.
My talk also goes to money, except in the totally opposite sense. This is Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas both holding out for large contracts. And what's really cool about this case is there's talk of collusion from both sides. Mm-hmm. It's illegal for teams to, not illegal for agents to. But there's rumors of that happening on both sides. And when you look at contracts, they're eerily similar. 5 years, $70 million, $14 million a year is the average, and $45 million guaranteed for both. Really similar. And I've got to say, who do you like better of those two? I like Dez.
Oh, I'm a big Cowboys fan. So you already know I'm going with Dez Bryant. I'm glad to see him back with my team next year. And I'll be trying to get him on my fantasy football roster team as well. So, and really quickly, I want to wrap things up by also shouting out Brandon Dawson, who also signed a deal with the LA Clippers for the league minimum $523,000. So Brandon Dawson impressing throughout the summer league in Orlando, averaging a double-double throughout the four games he played in. Brandon Dawson, absolutely spectacular, and I'm glad to see another Spartan making it happen in the NBA. Well, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to WKAR's Current Sports with me right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic weekend. It is going to be a scorcher. The hottest weekend we've had in the summer so far, near 90 degrees both on Saturday and Sunday. Get that AC pumping, all right? Take care and be easy, people.